breakfast as soon as I can.
The mailbox is full.
Greetings, the automatically deleted husband, and several things, and I'll stick with just two. One was, you know, I made the mention of Gonzalo Lira Friday. Got off the phone, stopped the video, did it, and I got an email. The reason I found this out is I got an email. Because apparently Friday, he died. And I think the timing of what I did just was amazing. But, so I'm using the photo of his, that was the May arrest. You know, cause, you know, I think about, in a lot of respects, what he did with all the videos that he was doing, being very public, and discussing the things that were going on in Ukraine very openly and very articulately, you know, right there in Ukraine, that the Ukrainian, the SBU, their effectively their secret service kind of thing, you know, arrested him and put him in prison. And the way he describes in that video when he was trying to escape and seek asylum in Hungary, you know, he acknowledged what happened that if he gets caught, he's dead. Well, he was right. He's dead. Because apparently he did get caught. And, you know, I've heard some of the descriptions, both the more recent and some of the previous ones of his, the abuse that was done to him. And, you know, one of the things I think about is, you know, he was tortured. There's physical torture and there's mental torture. And, you know, there is, one of the things he described in his last videos was the idea of how you do physical torture and try not to leave a mark. You know, and it, you know, because you typically think of the rack, for example, or stuff of that nature, where it's intense pain, and the objective is I want to cause you an agonizing death. But the other thing is, again, it's the idea of I want to cause you agony over a long period of time. And then of course there's I want to cause you agony and do it publicly to warn others. Which, you know, again, is the example of Julian Assange. Or various things like that. But either way, I find the timing interesting. I made the comment, and then he dies. You know, because I never directly attempted to contact him. But I have attempted to contact several people he's associated with. And successfully, in a couple cases, that didn't go anywhere at this point. Because, and the, one of the ones that, because there's a bunch of videos that I have linked. This one from the New Atlas. This is Brian Berletic. And he does an intro about this. Then he went on to other things. But the intro, one of the things he stated, this guy's very clear and very good, very articulate also, is he wasn't completely on the same page with him. He had some disagreements. But there was a mutual respect and, you know, a serious dialogue, a serious mutual challenge, which, and I've heard them state this previously, both Lira and many others, that there is a, well, my word would be a joy in interacting with others where you don't agree. And I'm going to give you an example of that here in a moment. But, you know, the other thing that I think is important is that one of the things that was done by him, by his dad, for example, as a U.S. citizen, he went to the U.S. government for help. And just like so many other cases, they did the opposite. They probably helped in very many ways to cause his death. Because, you know, he's the so-called enemy of the state. you know? But these are the people I want to help. People, because again, he was censored from YouTube, he was censored, lost some of his stuff. He got back on. I don't remember all the details, but whatnot. But a lot of the stuff he did was wiped away. Particular videos were gone because he says the wrong things. And when the overlords say no, that's, you know, again, that's the purpose of Shofar Nexus. But anyway, Sunday, because Friday had a bunch of issues and so did Saturday, so I went and swam on Sunday. And I went early. I looked at the time when the pool was open, and I saw 8 to 4 for open swimming. So I figured, okay, about 10:30, so about 10 o'clock, whatever it was, I went. And there was a church that was meeting at the building, so it wasn't open. And then I found out what I looked at was Saturday's time instead of Sunday's, because I did see on Sunday, oh yeah, it doesn't open till 1. So I went back, but I did interact with one gentleman in the beginning. And, you know, did ask a few questions, and that was kind of interesting. But I decided to leave shortly after noon, so I would be there comfortably before the 1 p.m. Opening time to possibly get into a dialogue. And the Lord said, yes. And a gentleman who was helping, you know, manage people in and out and so forth, he and I got into a dialogue, Ryan, for about a half hour. Fairly deep on lots of things. One of the things I found fascinating was, you know, I asked him, does this church believe that the Bible is true? And it was roughly, yes, the church does, but he doesn't. And that was interesting. And we discussed why. And he gave the stuff about, he couldn't understand how the Lord in the old, what the words I said to him, you know, the Old Testament's the grumpy God, the New Testament's the nice God. And he said, basically, yeah, he didn't like that. He couldn't understand why somebody, and he specifically said why the Lord would have somebody killed for doing some work on Sunday. And, you know, I wasn't well prepared to answer that. But Chris and I discussed this for a while today. And it's Numbers 15, 32 through 36 is the passage about while the people of Israel were in their wilderness, they found a man gathering sticks on the Sabbath day and so forth. And he was put to death. But I won't read that. But the thing that was important as because I didn't have a good solid answer and did some study and so forth. But as we were talking, you know, we did the normal thing, back up a few verses. You know, so this starts at 32, go to 29. You shall have one law for him who does anything unintentionally, for him who is a native among the people of Israel and for the stranger sojourns among them. But the person who does anything with a high hand, whether he is a native or a sojourner, reviles the Lord, and that person shall be cut off among his people. Because he has despised the word of the Lord and broken his commandment, that person shall be utterly cut off, and his iniquity shall be on him. See here. The thing that I found fascinating is, you know, because one of the passages that I dwell on a lot is Psalm 19, you know, let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my rock, my redeemer. I find that a very important verse. It's a request. And it's my request. But the verse before, keep back your servant also from presumptuous sins. Let him not have dominion over me. Then I shall be blameless and innocent of great transgression. And I find it fascinating. Here's the idea of presumptuous sin. And what you see in the Numbers 15 is, it seems, an example of presumptuous sin. There's a difference between, not that I didn't know, but if I commit a sin, even knowing that I commit a sin, that's one thing. But if I commit a sin because I want to say, I'm being defiant, there's a sin where the motivation is I want what that sin is, you know, the light duty stuff. I'm a glutton. I'm going to eat as, you know, a second helping, a third helping or whatever, and I don't need it. I'm a glutton. So that's a very mild sin of gluttony. But I do it knowingly. I know I'm being a glutton. I'm going to do it anyway. There's a difference between that and I'm doing it, even being a glutton, because I want to show God I'm in control. I willfully want to be defiant, not because my motivation is gluttony, but my motivation is I want to defy God. And I think that's where the presumptuous sin is. And so I think I have a better answer for this gentleman if we ever speak again in that difference, because I think that's what we see in the Old Testament in that particular passage. Because you see the same kind of thing in Acts. It's Ananias and Sapphira, is that the two that were, you know, we sold our property and here's the money, but we kept back some. So they willfully lied, being defiant, and they obviously, both of them were struck down dead. So that grumpy God you see in the New Testament, when you use that those term, but I think the point is there's a difference between the presumptuous sin, I'm going to be defiant, versus I'm going to submit to my passion, my lust, which I guess is fundamentally different. But there was, you know, there has been this dialogue, you know, so, I found that gentleman's dialogue interesting. We went into a bunch of other things and it was a good dialogue but I may go swim again next Sunday for the purpose of maybe hopefully meeting him again. But, over the last many weeks, there was a gentleman that I've interacted with a bit, Chad, who wrote an article, Liberty Once Lost is Lost Forever. And we had a comment exchange, rather lengthy, on it. And it didn't go over well. It troubled me. There was a couple, even a couple spots, and I even mentioned it, where I felt that I said things a little too assertive. And I apologized for it. But it kind of went silent. And then last week he made a comment to me, again, a long one. And, you know, one of my objectives in an earlier comment, it says, you know, there's too much on the table. Let's do one thing at a time. And so he put a bunch of things on the table again. I picked one item to respond in detail. And, you know, there's a couple things about this. One is, I want to make the tools to make what I did, the study I did, in order to, you know, one, this study is built on years of studying this subject, but I did some additional study because I went deep into the language, deeper than I've ever had before. And I want to do this to lower the barrier so others can. But that's, you know, that's the show for a book idea, but anyway, we'll dwell there. But, you know, what I wrote is, there's so much on the table, so let me again attempt to dig into one issue at a time. You state, and I quoted him, that doesn't negate the fact that presbyteros is an office. And he put asterisks around the is to, you know, for emphasis. And, you know, my response was, it simply is not, as the word does mean elder as in age. We are called to mature in wisdom, and age allows us to do so, but that is not often achieved. A wise elder is called to be eldering, or presbyro, the verb form of elder, which is often translated as ambassador. An ambassador is not the authority, but an authorized messenger to convey the authority's message. It is not an office that has authority, but a duty. And see, you know, he's trying to make a case that the offices in the church of deacon, overseer, elders, and so forth are defined by God. And I'm making the case that no, they're not. It's a twisting of the language. Again, the word office is an added in word when you see it in the 1 Timothy or Titus passages. It's not in the original. It's not in the Greek. So it's in there, and it gives a connotation that I contend is not appropriate. But I do think, you know, because this is the thing that I find so important, is to see how one word, how it's used in different ways, in different forms. This is one of the issues with the Strong's numbers, because you can look at, Presbyter Ross Episcopae and Episcopos. They're two different numbers, and you don't see the direct relationship. And I would like to, because when I'm using that, in this, I go through various versions of the word. I have found a couple of sites, one in particular, that does a very good job of showing you the related stuff. But anyway, the idea that you don't get elected to the office of elder, but that you, when you're older, you should be, we might say oldering, or being eldering, as I describe it, actually living out the fact that you're older and you should have matured. And of course, when you see in the Titus and Timothy, you see the qualifications idea. That's what, because one of the things I found fascinating, there was somebody I remember asking, well, okay, I'm not pursuing the office of elder or in the church, so what are the qualifications I should pursue, or the model? And the response was, it's the same thing. And I thought, that makes sense. It is the same thing, because there is no office. It is the call for anyone who's maturing to growing older. It's not a call for particular people. It's a call for all. And of course, again, most people, it's the presumptuous sin idea. Anyway. But I went on, because using Ephesians 4, 11 and 12, and claiming those are offices in the sense of authority, is in contrast to what is written. There are gifts or abilities given by the Lord for the receiver to do the duty required. This is the pastors, elders, teachers, and so forth. A good example is the teacher. The mature are called to teach, but not take on the title of teacher, Matthew 23, 8, which would imply authority. The teacher proclaims the Lord, but is not assigned any authority. And I think one of the things that's important, the reason I use that example, is because I've described before, you shall not be called teacher, rabbi, so forth. Because rabbi, rabboni, didaskalos, and teacher are four different languages, the same word. And you should not be called rabbi. And you say, well, I'm not a rabbi, I'm a teacher, you know, a Sunday school teacher. But you have the title of teacher. Teacher, rabbi, again. Different language, same word. I use it as an example for that purpose. Again, a teacher does not have authority. I think this is the reason why you're not supposed to take on the title, because you're not saying, I am the authority and what I say is so. To teach would be to say, this is what the facts are, and I'm going to try to express them to you, but I'm not the authority of those facts. The Lord is. Anyway, then it goes on. 1 Timothy 3:1 describes the work or duty to be desired, not an office to acquire. Episcopae is the genitive form of the noun describing the duty of oversight. Verse 2 describes the person doing that duty, or episkopos, and the characteristics he must have. Again, it is a duty, not an authority, no authority is conveyed. It is a responsibility for oversight, but does not grant authority to the overseer. And see, one of the things is, when you see nouns used, specifically in the Greek, it's the episcope is... This is what you have, a characteristic that you have in this case, or you're seeking, the duty, or the noble task, or however, whatever translation you have, a characteristic of that is to be the overseer. It is not, that's not the the object of the sentence. This is a describing what that should have, whereas the episkopos is, this is what you are. So if you are an overseer, then you have particular duties to do. So the idea to, the desire is not that I want this title, it's I want this duty. And I think that's important. And I go on with, keep in mind the verb form of episkeptomai, which is most often seen in some form, as some form of visit, such as James 1:27, to visit orphans and widows. This again is the duty, as seen in a serious act of love, not an office with an authority. And again, you will see episkeptomai many times, and the day of your visitation is typically episkeptomai. So and so forth. I think it's an important concept. As I mentioned previously, you know, episkopos, episkope, and episkeptomai is based on scopos, the watchman we see in Ezekiel 3 and 33, but it's also seen in the New Testament. So, going on, the word is based on scopio or scopos, the different versions, which is seen as the watchman or a goal. You know, so when I looked in the definition of that, it is, you know, just another source described it as, again, the idea, I'm supposed to be the watchman, and I'm after a certain goal. Both of those are in the definition. Well, I'll go on. It is where we get the English skeptic. It is the idea of digging into something, observing, watching, or contemplating. My use of dig in my opening was a play on this idea. You know, because that's why I did that purposely, an attempt to dig into one issue. Because I've described how the scopos is the idea of to dig into. Anyway, my use of, it is seen in Galatians 6:1, looking to yourself, or Philippians 3:17, observe those who walk according to the pattern. It's a foundation that we are to do, or a duty, not a basis for authority being granted. And I think there's several other verses, but I just grabbed two. The idea of, we're doing examination, and you know, the idea of contemplating. We're looking at ourselves. The scopos idea. We're looking at ourselves in the context and seeing, are we doing right? The watchman, you know, when you look at Ezekiel 3 and 33, the watchman is not only watching for the attack of, you know, an enemy, but a violation of our community is violating the Lord's commands. You know, that's the context in both those cases. We are not following the Lord. The watchman is called to warn. Follow the Lord. And, you know, so it's a big deal. And if you don't warn, their blood is on your head. So, I mean, this is a big deal. And, of course, this would apply to the episkopos, the overseer of today, I would contend. The other thing, which I think was important, Titus 1:5 is to appoint or set in place elders for a duty. It is not to appoint men to the office of elder. It is not to appoint men to be older, but to appoint older men who have demonstrated characteristics for the duty being an overseer, not for the authority of an office. Because he made a comment that this is what I'm responding to. He says, you don't appoint someone to be an older person. Of course, what he did was absolutely twist the language, because it doesn't say that. It is to appoint older men to do the duty. I mean, if you examine the words carefully, if you look into the words, I will contend, this is what you will find. It is not, you know, this is why I left you in Crete, so that you might put what remained in order and appoint elders in every town as I directed you. And so, appoint elders in every town. It's not to appoint people to be elders. It's to appoint elder people to do certain things. And so that's the important thing. It's not, I'm going to appoint you as an elder. That's not what it says. I want to appoint you, an elder person, to do this duty. Vital, very important. And, you know, he made a comment about, you know, got to look at the script, something about effectively look at the whole thing in context. And I did mention this is, and one of the things that was so fascinating is the more I study the scripture, the more I see there's a consistency. One of the things that I would contend is the thing that makes the scripture true is its consistency. It's remarkably consistent. And the more you dig into it, the subtleties you see, and just the simple idea of being the watchman, being the overseer, and that consistent idea, and how it is an act of love. To warn somebody, you're violating the you know, don't abandon the Lord. Trust him. That's an act of love. To visit orphans and widows is an act of love. It's a big deal. Anyway, there are other things, but enough. It really got to me, and I dwelled on it a lot Saturday, the issues around Gonzalo Lira, because it was a reminder there's the people who crawl in a hole. I'm retired. I don't have to deal with this. And I can't. I am in less than ideal circumstances. And I don't have to be. I could live on theft from the next generation. But I can't do that. And I've had 2 or 3 dialogues in the last couple days. Again, on, I scare people. Boo. I trust my Creator. I don't like my circumstances. I saw something recently. I forget what it was. Oh, it was some. A comedy spoof on something, but I think that's what it was. But there was a guy holding his young child, you know, 4, 5 years old, and kind of hold him around. And what I saw in him is how he held his child, and could have fun with that child, but was in complete control in the sense that that child was being loved. And I remember how easy it was for me to hold my young kids. It was kind of like, they're my kids. They're fun. They're great to have around. There was no barrier between me and them. I love them. A barrier was imposed. And I'll rip you apart. I celebrate those who can still enjoy that. My lady, my wife, your husband is trying to be an elder. I am an elder simply because I'm about to turn 68, but also I've been striving to mature, to grow closer to perfection or completion, maturing. To go closer to my Creator. I want to share that with you. So much. I think of you often. Think of you fondly. My lady, my wife, your husband loves you and asks for you back.